Welcome back to the AI Minds podcast. This is a podcast where we explore the companies of tomorrow built AI first. And I, like always, am your host, Demetrios. And this episode is brought to you by DeepGram, the number one speech-to-text and text-to-speech API on the internet today, trusted by the world's top conversational AI leaders, startups, and enterprises. Some of them you may have heard of, like Spotify, Twilio, NASA, and Citibank. In this episode, we're joined by my man, Michael, the founder and CEO of Sell Me This Pen. How you doing, dude?
Pretty good. I appreciate you. Good to be here. I'm doing all right.
Well, let's back up a bit. Before Sell Me This Pen, you started off in your journey as a musician. You quickly jumped into the business world, went corporate first, and recognized you didn't like that atmosphere where you had to scan your badge and you were being watched like a hawk. And so you got familiar with startups, right? What was the first startup that you joined?
Good question. So first startup, it was with a best friend of mine. I'm actually staying at his place in a tiny little town called Ingersoll, 2 hours away from Toronto. Nice. So he was running this group meetings for people to practice their English. So just imagine if you're in a country that you don't, you know, hang out with a lot of English speakers. If you want to improve your English, you need a community to be able to openly, you know, have conversations, make mistakes, get some feedback, et cetera, et cetera. So he was doing this basically in physical, you know, events, if you will. And when I joined in, the idea was like, can we make it a marketplace? Can we get a, you know, global presence where people from all over the world can actually come to this, you know, tiny little sessions and practice? And we were talking 15 something years ago when we started this.
Wow.
So, again, we started as a community, running some sessions. My friend got some background in teaching. And then we started bringing more teachers, you know, to the platform. So it was just kind of like a connect with an expert and get some practice with the community sort of like environment. And we raised some angel money. The guys ended up, you know, joining a startup Chile at some point. And I moved to sales. So I started my first, you know, sales job at this corporate called PCM, selling Microsoft, you know, solutions, Office 365, dealing with CTOs and IT departments. And to your point, I hated the culture.
So you got out of that. And as a former ESL, English as a second language teacher in Spain, I understand the pain. And I think that product that you all were working on is a fun one. I wished there was something like that to help my students back in the day. If only I would have met you a little earlier, it could have been a little easier. But then you went on to work for some bigger names, right? I know you were working for Hopin for a little bit, and you started your own stuff too in those years after corporate. Can you tell us about what that journey was?
Yeah, absolutely. So with Hopin, I actually failed a second startup. So we had some, you know, massive success before actually failing. So we hit $1 million in ARR in 6 months. And
wow.
We had to go through some, you know, iterations and we pivoted because of some of
what the challenges. What was the startup? What were you
in
doing?
Theory. So at the time, I was actually in the Middle East. So being crazy enough, you know, traveling around the world, that I was in the Middle East. And we started this startup there. We grew really quickly. But then because of sanctions and some political, you know, issues, we had to, you know, do a number of pivots and we ended up actually shutting down the company. So I'm back to Canada and I started doing consulting with, you know, a bunch of startups and then Hopin popped up. So at the time, if you remember during COVID, it was a big, you know, name, fastest growing startup in history, et cetera, et cetera. And I joined right after Series A and I stayed with them until a $400 million Series C, where things actually started to get a little bit messy. And kind of like the idea of Sell Me This Pen was born inside Hopin because some of the things I had to do, you know, manually helping some junior refs get up to speed, kind of like translated to the platform that we have today. And I decided to, you know, quit Hopin and go full time with Sell Me This Pen. And it's been almost, 2.5 years that have been doing this full time right now.
So talk to me about the messiness of going from a Series A company, and I imagine there was probably 40, 50 people working at the company, to a Series C, getting a lot of cash. And then I can imagine a good chunk of that cash was invested into the sales team. So you're scaling up. You're also getting all different caliber reps. And you have to, like you said, train up some of them. How did it get messy? What do you mean by that word?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. Look, hyper growth to startups, obviously, you know, things are messy. It's not only about, you know, sales team. Everything is crazy. You're moving fast. You're, you know, experimenting. And there's not necessarily a problem with that. And especially those days, like with Hopin, obviously, we were getting this massive, you know, inbound because of, you know, COVID. So everybody wants to run their events. They don't want to go out of business, but it's, you know, physical event anymore, right?
Yeah.
I can talk about challenges that sales team in particular actually faced. And to me, it was kind of like similar to anywhere else that I worked at. Even with the corporate, you know, we had, you know, trainers flying from, I don't know, states to Canada to teach us about Microsoft products, or we have some materials. Companies typically are really focused on the product they're selling to their clients. So learn about all the bells and whistles that their product, you know, offers, rather than focusing on buyer personas, because that is really difficult to teach, let's say, a fresh green rep how to have a great conversation with a CTO, with a CMO. Like, the age gap itself, if you think about it, it makes things really difficult. So Hopin was not different, you know, compared to other startups or companies I worked at. We didn't have a really good structured sales training relevant to the buyer persona we were selling to. And also in terms of coaching, that basically helped reinforce that training and adjust some of the mistakes and problems, you know, reps actually face during their, you know, interactions with clients was almost, you know, invisible. Why? Because managers didn't have the bandwidth. You face with this massive, you know, fast growth. So you need to focus on, you know, pipe reviews instead of coaching during one-on-ones. And then at some point in, I think it was around close to Series C, we brought someone for sales enablement, but the expectation was wrong. You have a sales organization of 200, 250 people struggling differently because each individual is different, right? And you have one person enablement team trying to build a program around, you know, efficacy of their practices. And obviously, like anywhere else, enablement is typically, you know, tracking adoption to methodology or people attended to my, you know, training session. But because these practices are really event-based, so you get it during onboarding, you get it when you screw up your, you know, quota this quarter, you get it when you have new product launch. It's not really continuous and around foundational skill sets. And that's where all the problems actually started to, you know, pop up, when inbound leads get a little bit less heavy compared to there. 2-3 months, you know, when things started to open up, people realize, okay, we need the outbound muscle to work, but we don't have the skill sets. And it's really hard to quickly, you know, bridge that gap, especially when you're in that hyper growth mode.
So the enablement was there to try and help the sales team get better at what they're doing. And they were doing that by running sessions. Is that what I understood?
So just imagine this way. When I say everything is really event-based, I can give you real life examples. We ran some role play sessions in group setting, maybe once a month, which is not enough, because the best way you can actually master a skill set, regardless of what it is, it's not only about sales, is to practice. You learn swimming, but most probably it's just like, you know, going back and forth many times, you know, drank some water, be scared, but you keep doing it. And then you have your trainer standing up there said, hey, fix your hand, go a little bit this, you don't need to rush through it. So that's the coaching it. So what enablement was doing, running this training session in a group setting, which is really uncomfortable, and randomly choosing a few reps to role play. So first and foremost, many of the other reps didn't get a chance to actually practice. And the ones who actually did practice in a group setting felt uncomfortable, because I'm like, oh, dude, the VP of sales is sitting there. If I screw up, you know, it's my career. Maybe I don't get the, you know, next position because of this.
Yeah.
And also, enablement was really heavy on material. Let's just get all these great videos from Gong. Let's gather some information from LinkedIn. And all this scattered data, although it was just like getting closer as, you know, one source of truth, let's call it a playbook. Nobody goes through that playbook. You know, you never get better at a performance-based career by reading. Okay, I read this book. I might actually boost my self-confidence a little bit, but it's not real because can you actually apply what you learn in real life?
Yeah, you have to put it into practice. And so you were seeing that since folks were getting very sparse information on how they could get better and then not having this dojo to go and train in, there weren't the type of results that you would expect.
That is absolutely correct. And it was for myself as well. So I was aiming for more, you know, senior positions, but I'm like, okay, I have some material in front of me, but I'm high performing in my own role. How should I actually learn what am I doing? Right?
Yeah.
So it was kind of like even impossible. So it's the same thing almost everywhere. It's not only, you know, for Hopin. Like I would say I've seen this almost at every sales organization, at least I worked at.
And what makes a good sales playbook?
Look, I would say it's bad to say, like, because I don't believe in playbooks, to be honest. I don't believe in massive hundreds of pages of playbook that we, you know, gather only through some historic data. I would say if it's in smaller pieces and if it's something that you can use it today as a seller and you can easily access to the data that you need, then it's worthy, regardless of how thick or, you know, tiny your playbook might be. Companies obsess over adding all sort of data to say, I have a complete playbook for 100 page, but do your reps actually go and read it? So if it's something that you can quickly digest and apply to your day-to-day, then it's valuable. Otherwise, it's just, you know, waste of time actually building one.
So it's almost like if you're trying to cover all these different edge cases, you're shooting yourself in the foot.
I believe so. If you cannot offer practice on those specific use cases, then you're just wasting your time, you know, gathering information that is already, you know, available. Yes, it could be company, you know, specific, but information does not help you become a great performer. It's needed for, you know, reps to go through it, to get familiar, you know, with your specific use case as a company, but practice is the key to actually mastering anything. That's what I believe.
So tangible, actionable, bite-sized insights are the most valuable. And I can attest that whenever I'm going on to a call and I'm trying to think about the 50 things that I need to do in this call, as opposed to just hyper-focused on one thing, what is one outcome that I'm trying to get from this call, the call goes infinitely better when you're just focusing on one thing that you're trying to understand.
That is true. As long as you don't, you know, complicate the situation, I think you can expect a better result.
And so are there certain things that you have seen in these bite-sized teachings that are worth their weight in gold for sales reps?
I would say the first step is to understand the gaps. So yes, maybe you're a fresh, you know, junior rep, you just got started, you've never been in sales, but there's a reason why you started in sales for now. Hopefully it's not out of, you know, desperation that you wanted to start in this career because you see the uptake, you can make a lot of money, you can make big impact, you can, you know, expand your network, but you're good at certain things. And I would say most salespeople are good at building rapport and they don't necessarily have a big problem with, you know, having conversations with people. First and foremost, for companies, if you can do skill gap assessment to understand like what areas of improvement to focus on, you're doing a big favor to yourself and to your reps and your sales organization as a whole. So if Michael is struggling with digging deep for, you know, pain and finding business problem during discovery calls, this is really specific. Yeah. So you can focus on actually helping with him with that rather than giving him a one-on-one. Let's talk about from setting agenda till the end of it. If it's, again, based on individual needs, there is value in it. If it's just a generic one-size-fits-all practice, I would say it's a waste of time because people really have different needs, different skill gaps.
I love that. I totally see it because my problems are much different than your problems, and especially depending on how advanced I am in the company and the understanding of the features and everything that's going on there, and how advanced I am as my sales career goes on. So you were at Hopin, you decided, all right, there's got to be something that I can do to create a better experience for sales reps. How did Sell Me This Pen come about?
I remember we hired a number of SDRs at some point, and some of them was actually coming on my calls. And I remember I joined one of the SDRs and one of his qualification calls. And he started talking about enterprise pricing. I know there's a big debate of like SDRs shouldn't talk about pricing, or they should, or surface level, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember I was just sending him a message on Slack, please don't say anything. This is large enterprise. Say you can have deeper conversation on pricing.
Stop talking right now.
Exactly.
At channel. Cut this guy off.
And after the call was done, like we had a one-on-one. He said, why did you say that? How did you know? It's like, because you do a quick research and I can see, you know, the use case is bigger than that because of this, this, and that. And then honestly, like I kind of got a little bit pissed. I was like, your manager should do this. I shouldn't do that. Your manager should do this. Plus,
should do what? Give you the feedback?
Should give you the feedback. Should be on those calls and actually give you the feedback. We have this in, you know, startup culture that everybody should help everyone. But at the same time, we are taking people from their day-to-day work, and I was one of their high-performing reps, not to basically go out there and sell and go help with onboarding, which I understand it helps with the culture, with team building, but we pretty much didn't have, at least at that point, I'm sure after Series C, hopefully with some feedback, they figured this out. I don't know because I have no idea. But before that, we didn't have this manager one-on-one sessions where we could actually go and talk about tactical things, really listen to conversations or have a conversation around the problems that I face in this specific, you know, call and get some actionable feedback so I can do better next time, right? So I started having this conversation with a technical friend of mine, my former CTO. It's like, look, I'm doing this. Can we just imagine if you could replicate me, and instead of me going on the call, and managers actually don't go. So just imagine if other reps don't go on a call. Could we give some direction to reps, at least by saying, don't say anything, or do say that? Can we just do that? So the idea of Sell Me This Pen was born as a real-time assistant. Right now, obviously, you know, it got more legs to, you know, practice and coaching, et cetera, et cetera. We started being a real-time assistant, just helping reps ask the right questions and handle objections easier. So that was the MVP of this product. And then again, we iterated a few times and the product is a little bit different, but we still have that, you know, real-time coaching and, you know, help as well. So,
what did you pivot to? What gave you the signals that you needed to change the product?
While I was at Hopin, yes, the idea was born because of that experience, but I started doing a lot of research. I think I had over 400 conversations in spam of 5-6 months with sales enablement leaders, with, you know, VPs of sales, head of sales. And I realized, okay, coaching is important. Being in real time, adjusting some of this behavior makes things really sticky for the rep because it's just happening there. You just imagine you're inside the ring. You're not expecting the punch. You get the punch and then someone comes and said, that's okay. Just stand up and you go from the left, right? But if the foundation is not built, this might actually just distract reps rather than, you know, giving them more coaching or help in real time. So we started looking around and said, at the time, it was only one company was doing something similar to what we do today, Second Nature. They were doing this, you know, role play practices. And I was like, okay, what if we can add a practice module to what we do? So reps can actually practice before going on calls and burning leads through realistic, you know, practices with AI buyers. And then when they get to the point or certain, you know, score or certain skill set built, then we set them, let's say, on field and let them have an interaction with the client. So that's where we actually did not change necessarily what we had. We added role play as part of the offering. So kind of like this is what we say right now, we help reps before, during, and after the calls. So it's an end-to-end sort of like coaching cycle where they start by practice, get some coaching, like one-on-one setting, and then you go on actual call. You get help when you are with the client, and right after the call, you get that feedback. So you're not reliant of another rep or a manager or someone from enablement. You always have access to, you know, feedback 24/7 based on real conversations. So we kind of like connect practice and execution together right now.
Man, I cannot tell you how valuable it would have been for me in my sales days to have that warm-up before the call of, all right, cool, let me try to say these things or get this information that I'm looking for. Again, going in, singular focus, all right, this is what the outcome that I'm looking for in this is, here's how I'm going to go about it, and I have a sparring partner, and I get the opportunity to ask the question in various different ways, or I get the opportunity to see maybe there's an objection over here, maybe there's a way that they're putting it, or maybe they just don't want to tell me, so I have to try and ask again in a different way. Maybe let me see if I can rephrase this. All of that just would get me so warmed up so that when I go on to the call and I could see myself, I 100% would have done this, you know, like the hour before the call, I would have just been trying to run back the call that I'm about to go on, and where I would get tripped up is go back to that and try and run it 3 or 4 or 5 times back. And then when I get on the call, I would feel like, oh, well, this is second nature already.
Yep. That's exactly the idea. Like, you practice to build that muscle memory. And you ask me about my former life being a musician. Sometimes people think, okay, there's magic. Like, you read all these notes and you listen to, you know, the sounds of, you know, the songs and everything, and then all of a sudden you're a pro. But in reality, the part that helps you actually become a good performer and to boost your confidence, to know things by heart. And you get that through practice. Like, you practice hours and hours and hours. You know the rhythm. You know exactly, you know, where the hook will come. So you don't need to even look at anything when you're on the stage. It's pretty much the same, you know, concept, dude.
Yeah, you know how it has to sound, and you know what an A note sounds like because you've heard it so many times. And
true.
So I agree with that. And I also can see the value in, after a rough call, I thought I was fully prepared and I just got rocked. And then I go back and I get a little bit, I can listen to the call back, or I can get some choice words from a coach that never goes to sleep and is never out of office, right?
This is a very good point. And currently the problem with, you know, solutions that are, you know, widely available to companies is, okay, you screwed up a call. First and foremost, reps don't bring that call for, you know, one-on-one sessions with their managers because it's ugly, you know, you feel weird.
Yeah.
But just imagine if you can bring one call, first and foremost, maybe you screwed up 3 other calls. Maybe there are some learnings in each one of them. Maybe you face the same challenge over and over again. But because of the bandwidth problem, you can only, let's say, focus on one call, right? And the judgment, the fear of being judged at least is still there. And also with the tools, to your point, if you have call recording tools, which is great, you see the reality, but what's next? Okay, I listened to this and it seems like I didn't do a good job. How should I change it? So if my manager don't tell me, and by the way, many frontline managers don't even know how to coach. The high performing reps, they just turn to managers. So that coaching skill to give you that safe environment to open up and also have the skill sets to transfer knowledge the way you can actually apply as a performer on your own ways, on your terms. You're not the manager, right? You have different skill sets, different personality. So what we do differently right now with Selling the Spend, you can have a verbal conversation with your coach, and the coach could be basically built based on your seller persona. So it's not only about what you're selling, but the type of sellers you have, let's say, on the platform onboarded. If they're junior reps, if someone is sensitive, if they like, you know, answers to be straight to the point. These are the things you can adjust with Sell Me the Spend, and your one-on-one conversation with your sales coach is really personalized based on your, you know, abilities and strengths and weaknesses, if you will.
Yeah, it reminds me of, I think I just saw a study that was done by, I want to say it was Harvard, on their incoming class who was allowed to use ChatGPT for the class. And not only allowed to, but almost like encouraged to. And they saw that people not only learned better, but they were higher engaged in the actual course, because you get the learnings in the way that you want the learnings, right? And so it does feel like 100% align with what you are saying. Now, the last thing I will ask is, do you do specific types of teaching sales methods? Is it like, because I know the Sandler method is huge out there. You have different closing strategies. Is all of that brought into it? Or is it something that I can choose as a rep?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. So we have some templates, obviously, and we have our own practices. We call it the SMTP, you know, methodology, but you can add any methodology. So if your organization, let's say, is a Sandler house, or if you guys are using Medic, you can easily, you know, build this scorecards and, you know, coaching methodologies based on your best practices or methodology, if you will. But again, to me, like, sales methodologies, they're pretty much all the same. Like, yes, they have different, you know, tweaks to things. One of my favorites is just Gap, for example, because it resonates with me. But you don't have to limit your, you know, your reps, especially if you don't have a solid methodology already, you know, embedded to your organization, and you're just testing the waters with different options. You can evaluate them based on different methodologies and then help yourself as a leader without actually paying the big buck, because something like command of the message for and work with 400, 500 reps will cost you $2 million or something. So instead of burning the cash, you can embed them and quickly test with your reps and see which one they adopt better before pulling the trigger and go full, you know, full implementation of any of these methodologies.
Nice. Well, Michael, man, this has been awesome. And I am so excited for your success. Keep rocking, dude. I really appreciate what you're doing. And
I appreciate you.
Yeah, it is. It's so cool to see. So keep it up.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.